You know, everybody's got a to-do list. Drop off the dry cleaning, pick up some milk. Here's an idea. Let's save hundreds of dollars on car insurance. And the good thing is you don't have to drop off or pick up anything. All you have to do is go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. Extra money in your pocket, it just may be the most rewarding to-do you do today.
Now Podcast One brings you Spike's Car Radio. A downloadable Cars and Coffee, hosted by writer, comedian, and automotive enthusiast, Spike Ferriston. Now, here's Spike.
Welcome to Spike's Car Radio. Maybe you can tell by the boom, maybe it sounds different to you. We are not in Malibu today, we're not in Beverly Hills. Well, we are in Beverly Hills, but somewhere different. McLaren of Beverly Hills for their open house. It's a little quiet here, though, guys. There's no one here yet. I think we're here before the big open house they have here.
People
today,
don't
right?
get to open houses at 9:30.
The big shoppers are rolling in after lunch after some cocktails.
Yeah. And you probably recognize one of those voices, of course. The Real Zuckerman is here with us today. And the other feller is Christopher John Wilson, CJ Wilson, my friend, a former Major League Baseball player, and now a dealership magnate. Right? How many dealerships do you own, CJ?
15 now.
15. A mere 15 dealerships.
Baker's dozen.
Does it feel strange to you to be in a McLaren dealership that isn't your dealership?
Completely. Although, ironically, the new general manager here at the store was the guy that sold me all my cars when I was playing for the Rangers and the Angels.
Wow. So that P1 that you and I drove in Car Matchmaker came from here?
Yeah, the guy with the pocket square over there actually sold me that car back in the day.
Wow. What a dandy. Yeah.
So they are dressed very nice, Zuckerman. I appreciate that. You know, I appreciate a well-dressed man in a place like this.
I think he likes English style. Do they have to sport like an English style?
Yeah, we encourage at our McLaren dealerships, we encourage either a suit and tie or a shirt and tie and then some sort of fashionable sock thing going on or
and
whatever.
What do you do? Where first of all, where are your McLaren dealerships? One's in
Scottsdale,
right?
And Chicago.
And Chicago.
Yeah.
And do you put on a dandy suit?
Yeah. No, I have from my baseball days, I've got plenty of fancy suits with purple linings and all that kind of stuff, I mean, you've seen my car, so of course my suit collection is pretty wacky.
Sibilant, what do they call that color? Sibilis pearl?
Cerberus
pearl.
Sibilis pearl. That's a horrible color.
Syphilis red.
No, it's an amazing color. I met you on Car Matchmaking. I remember going down there and
at my little ghetto warehouse.
I didn't quite know who you were, to be honest with you, because I'm a Red Sox fan. And I didn't follow the Angels, and I like the Dodgers. And I heard you guys were going to be on the show. But I love baseball, so I was excited. And you meet CJ for the first time, and we're talking about, you know how this thing car guys do when you first meet another car guy and you're like, yeah, well, I got a new GT3 coming in. But you know that thing I'm talking about, Zuckerman, where you're kind of proffering what you own and what you have?
It's like it's like the way big fish swim next to each other and they size each other up to feel like, eh.
And
who gets the first bite?
Everything that I said, CJ was said, I'm getting three of those. New GT3, I'm getting four of those. P1, I've got one. It's right over there. He just had everything. I was like, Matt, who the hell is this guy? Where did he come
from? But I don't get
from?
All three of them at the same time. I've had,
To me, you were just the guy who's throwing fastballs for the Angels, and I had no idea how
just some dumb schlub that, is
not dumb. No, the one thing you know about...
That's a typical baseball player, projection, is people think that a pro athlete that likes cars is out there, losing $200,000 on a Rolls Royce Wraith or something. But
I'll subscribe to that prejudice. Yeah.
So it's okay. Right. So it actually helps me out.
I thought you were dumb when I met you.
It helps me out. It helps me out because I can kind of sneak in. I can have that as a sort of front and then sneak in the side door with my collector car thing.
Keep going,
you know.
Man. I gotta go get a water.
Okay.
Get a water, but okay. And so as long he won't appreciate this part of the conversation. So I'm going to ask you. You noticed there were cake pops over there for the grand opening.
Correct.
Could you throw those across the room and hit somebody?
You know, it's funny you should ask because I was actually on a TV episode where I was on the Mindy Show and I did hit Mindy Lahiri in the head with a cupcake from about 50 feet away. So, yes.
You see, this is what I like about you. Is that
it's a true story.
Arm is a weapon.
Yes.
I like the notion that you can use your arm to this day as a weapon. You could throw something across Wilshire Boulevard and hit that guy outside the pharmacy with a
cake pop. That accurate? What show did you say you were on?
The Mindy Show. The Mindy Project.
Oh. What is that?
The Mindy Project?
Oh, the Mindy.
Mindy Project.
Mindy.
Yeah.
And you threw a cupcake across the room. How many takes
so
did it take?
It was a wedding scene, and the idea was that she actually was trying to help break up a wedding that was getting ruined. And then I accused her of eating all the meatballs in the spread and then called her meatball and then was somewhat the jock bully, you know, and then was firing probably, you know, I mean, I'd say a good 65 feet, 70 feet. Cupcakes. And they're like, okay, throw it around her. It's okay to hit the body, but don't hit the head. And so, you know, in terms of accuracy, I did get a couple body shots in, but I did glance one off the forehead.
Oh, you
and
beat
messed
her.
Up her hair. He messed up her hair. So she, they were the hair and makeup guy was like, oh, God, not again.
How you know? Hard is it to throw a cupcake accurately? It's not a very
it's more
round,
a,
hard thing,
no,
right?
No, but it's really like you have
this
to size
by,
it
by
up.
The way, I love the way CJ can answer these questions.
Right.
Did you
he's
see him?
Very
he just
technical.
Went to work scientifically, and he's about to give a great answer. Go ahead.
You have to you can't just pick it up and throw it. You have to kind of give it that little bounce. Like, you know, is this a C cup or a B cup? You know, you have to kind of feel it out. Then you can really make
right,
a make
I
a true
said.
Make a true assessment of the weight.
I like
it's about the weight and the density. If it's really dense, it's easy to throw, like a ball of foil.
Right.
You know, you can nail somebody with that because you can ball it up really tight. But something really floaty,
right.
Like a paper ball, is
he doesn't talk like a baseball player, does he?
No, we went straight to Dr. We went straight to Mr. Spock.
Yeah, right to Mr. Spock. Right. I knew we were in a new space when. I said, which is faster, the P1 or your fastball, right? I was just trying to make a joke in the car. And what did you say in Car Matchmaker? Do you remember? You very quickly, without even taking a second.
I said, well, 0 to 60, my fastball is like, you know, I can go 60 feet in 0.4 seconds with a 90 mile an hour fastball. So that's faster
you
than
you accelerate faster than a P1, clearly.
Faster than any
just
car.
That he would know that and be able to make that scientific calculation that quickly and answer that question. Like, it wasn't a question. I was just joking around, trying to get some laughs in the car, but... That's what we like about you, CJ. This is going to be fun.
That's it. Okay. Well, I guess I'm done here.
No, we've got a long way to go, my friend. Where does it, you know, you're doing so much right now. You're racing for Porsche, right? You've got all these dealerships. Which is your primary dealership? The Porsche Fresno?
Yeah,
is
I'd say Porsche Fresno.
Fresno. I just sound like
Fresno.
Trump there for a second.
Fresno. Fresno. So yeah, when I bought the stores up there, they're all in the same parking lot.
Right.
And so I kind of float between all of them, but my main title is general manager of Porsche.
And Fresno. Why, and where did you decide that you were going to be a guy who sells cars? Like, where does this begin? Is this like a childhood dream?
Yeah, actually, as ironic as it is, it's okay to have more than one childhood dream, you know? So I wanted to, first thing off is
this bothers me again. I think that it's piggy to be really great at more than one thing in life. Most people aren't good at anything. And then maybe a guy like me is good at one thing.
But
and
you're so good at it that you have a garage full of other
good
things.
Good at other things.
Oh,
like,
and I'm not going to say I'm good at it. No, I'm good at one thing.
He could do stand-up.
No. He's great at road rage. He's
yes,
great at eating.
That.
He can really eat. He's good at
he's
very
good at picking people apart.
What's that?
He's good at
He's very good at analyzing people and yeah, but that's part of his business. He can do yeah, that right. very well.
But he's
But he, we're talking about as a child.
But wait a second. As a child he decided he wanted to be a baseball player. He decides he wants to be a car dealer. He's a race car driver. How many things can this? He's good looking. He's got a model wife. How many things have to go right for this guy?
He's so jealous of
yes.
you, CJ.
Is that right? It's not right.
See, the thing is, if I hug him,
you have
he'd
to
punch
learn
me.
To accept.
I can't these. Even hug him right now because he'll punch me.
No,
so
no,
he's,
I got all,
he's
I
aggressive.
See, I got
he's got too much
you have
caffeine
to learn
right
to
now.
Accept that these people are walking
okay,
around
ahead,
sucking. They're not like us. They have.
Listen,
they
I
have
had
these.
A miserable childhood.
You
okay?
did not.
I did 100%. Yeah, no, I did.
What was miserable about it?
You know, the typical.
I met your dad. He was a sweetheart of a guy.
He is now. Yeah, yeah. Now, so the first 12 years of my life were pretty scary. You know, and so you know, it's like I had some. I was raised mostly by my grandparents because they lived close by. My parents were both, you know, they split up when I was young, and mom was really into cars. Actually, dad was super into cars. My dad was on a pit crew for a race team when I was a kid. So I
no
used to
kidding.
Go, yeah, I used to
what
go
race
to,
team?
It was actually Danny McAllister's race team. I remember that, and the driver's name was Robbie Flock. And they raced dirt track midgets. And then eventually they did like F2000. And so I did go-karts and stuff when I was a little
kid.
And
we
ran out of money and it was too unsafe. So my mom could put the kibosh on it. And my dad was kind of bummed because he likes racing a lot.
Was that his primary job?
No, that was just like a weekend deal.
Weekend fun.
Yeah, Robbie Flock.
Yeah.
They don't have names like that anymore.
You know who Robbie Flock's rival was? A guy named Sleepy Trip. If that's not the best race car name ever. I mean, come on.
The dirt midget race.
Yeah. Zuckerman, did your dad even come close to approaching anything on the weekends like this? Like, my dad pretty much just started cracking beers on a Friday night and playing cards and smoking.
No, my dad did that too. That was the thing, but.
But wait. And you know, these California dads, these dads out here, these racing on the weekends, nothing, right?
My dad worked and smoked. And he didn't do anything else all week long, except maybe then take a nap.
Yeah.
That was it.
So that's pretty cool that stuff's happened. Would he take you out to the track?
Yeah, no, that was the whole thing. That was babysitting. So it was like when it was my weekend to go away with Dad, we'd drive up to Saugus or Ascot or wherever the racetracks were, and I'd be hanging on the fence getting sprayed with dirt and methane fumes, you know, so from methanol or whatever it is that they run. So, you know, my dad was really encouraging with baseball, though. I was very hard on myself because I felt like unless I was perfect, I wasn't going to succeed as a baseball player. So I'd be depressed after a game if I only had one hit or whatever. I would like beat myself up mentally. So I would actually.
But which was the bigger urge? Was it baseball or cars?
Both, because I understood that cars would beget baseball, right? So if I was good enough at baseball, then. So cars were the motivation to be good at baseball to get the cars, you know?
All right. Tell everyone the story. One of my favorite stories, I think you told us out at Bill's on the porch with Jerry, was the story of the coach telling you that you should quit baseball.
Yeah.
How old were you?
I was 8 and a half.
Because I think it really illustrates who you are and what kind of player you are and how you approach the game.
Right. So this is my first year playing baseball.
Right.
So I stepped
in. And you're how old?
I was 8 and a half. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, so most kids start when they're 4 or 5. They start in T-ball.
Right.
And they, you know, they just go through the normal path. Then there's coach pitch and whatever. I went straight to kid pitch. So the kids were already pitching by that point, and the kids that were hitting had been hitting for 3 or 4 years already.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a good arm because my dad and I would play catch, you know, like a Field of Dreams. Like,
but what's
hey,
the
dad,
story? The coach who comes up to you.
I was the second worst player on the team at the time. And
at 8 and a half.
At 8 and a half,
where all kids are bad players.
All full of energy. You know, I'd be like chasing the ball around and everything, but I'd fire it off. Like, I'd get so amped up when the ball would get hit to me, I'd fire it off into the next field. I'd throw it like over the first baseman's head. They had me playing third base. This is how good of a coach he was. I'm a lefty, and I'm playing third base.
Okay.
Clearly, this guy is not, you know, like Billy Martin or Buck Showalter. So, and I was a miserable hitter. So he kept trying to get me to swing with using a smaller and smaller bat, thinking that that would help me make contact or something. But basically, 3/4 of the way through the season, he said, "You are so terrible at this. You should quit and go play soccer because you'll never be any good at baseball.
This is what they said to an eight and a half year old.
You just don't have it."
I have a 9 and a 7 right now. I can't even imagine.
And here's the funny thing:
I can't even imagine anything other than a pat on the back. And good job. Let's do it again next year.
And maybe tell the parents, like, you know, you can say to the parents, "Hey, listen, you know, your son maybe isn't for this, or this isn't for your son."
No, I mean, these days, no. Everybody gets a trophy. Good for participating. Girls can play. That's the environment.
So this
coach says to you, don't play baseball anymore at 8 and a half, right?
And I looked at him and I said, well, because at this point I had already made my life plan. I had already filled out the business plan, you know, for the next 50 years of my life and knew exactly what I was going to do.
At 8 and a half.
Yeah, for sure.
You wrote it down?
Yeah, I did.
Do you still have that document?
I gave it to my mom, so she's a hoarder, so it's probably stuffed away in a closet somewhere.
Oh, no.
Whatever. So,
so what do you do? How do you react to that?
I just looked at him and I said, well, you know, Coach Golden, I'm actually going to be a Major League All-Star one day. And you'll regret this.
Coach Goldman. Right.
Golden. Yeah, George Golden. Golden.
But that, is this him? The same story? Maybe. I don't
his,
know that
his
this
son
is this
was named Garrett Golden. Yeah, so then a couple years later, I'm playing for Texas, you know, and I'm at this point.
All right, this isn't the story I wanted to tell.
But, yeah,
the story was the story where the coach tells you, you shouldn't be playing ball, and then you go home that summer and you buy a book.
Yes. Okay, that's exactly. So I always felt like there's.
So was that 8 and a half?
I was 9 at that point. Right, I was 9. So that off season, my dad got me my birthday's in November. So my dad got me Wade Boggs's book. Wade Boggs at the time, Red Sox,
right?
Perennial batting title. It was him and Tony Gwynn. Basically, had the highest batting average in the '80s and nineties. They hit like.
And by the way, I can't believe Wade Boggs wrote a book.
Right.
Well, it wasn't called Chicken and Beer. So The book basically put me really far ahead because I all of a sudden developed an advanced knowledge of hitting that nine-year-olds don't have.
Right. So at 9 years old, you buy this book, you read this Wade Boggs book. And it's like it tells you how
it's
to.
It's like being born again.
That's, and it tells you how to hit like a major leaguer.
Yes, exactly.
Right?
Like how to recognize the spin on different pitches and like the color and everything.
That's incomprehensible to any other nine-year-old in the world.
This is what's funny.
So maybe that helps.
I didn't know. I thought this was like 14 or 15. I didn't know it was 9 years old. I missed that part of it. So you come back the next season. You've read this book. Are you with this coach? But are you with this coach again?
Against that coach.
Against that coach, but you've processed intellectually.
And you know those memes where like somebody does something cool and then they deadpan to the camera like, "What's up now, bitch?" Like every time I'd get a hit against George Golden's team forever against that, it was like I hit a homer off his son and they're like, they just stand there. Like the ball's flying over the fence and I'm just like, "Oh, ain't that precious?"
Yeah. And that's how you said you've always approached baseball very cerebrally. You're able to. I remember you also saying you were able to remember how batter swings went, like what shape they took and throw.
Yeah.
2010, 2011, you're in the World Series, right?
Yeah.
Is it worse there, or is it the same?
No,
is
by that
just
point,
a game?
By that point, I had already had enough success and been a closer, which I felt helped me out a lot because when you're a closer and you're pitching at the end of the game when you could, you know, F it up and lose the game. That's the most pressure you can feel. You know, when your whole team has done everything right and you're the only thing standing between them and victory. And, you know, I had a really good record as a closer because I felt like that pressure, I couldn't let them down. You know,
right.
It's like that older brother syndrome or something like that where you just want to help and you want to make things good go well. But, you know, when you do lose a game for somebody else, it is the worst feeling. And I would go up to pitchers when I was a reliever and apologize to them like, "Hey, I'm sorry I cost you a win today." And they're like, "Well, you know, thanks for saying that.
Right,
you know,
right.
Just don't do it next time." Like, no, because most people don't take accountability like that. They always, they blame it or they drink it away and forget it happened, you know?
Didn't you tell me the car psychs you up for a game?
Always.
Always,
yeah,
right?
Always, yeah.
So the P1 gets you confident, right? Which cars make you feel the most confident?
Well, yeah, you know, I had a Career GT when I had financially no business buying it. And I was a relief pitcher.
That is fantastic.
It was the first year.
So you spent all your money on a Carrera GT.
Okay, think about this, right? They always say, like, how do you allocate your spending? I thought about it, like, what's my actual cost of living? And I'm going to spend every other dime of it on a car.
That's awesome.
He's like Mr. Formula. Like, you know, I always think about him, like, the story of the coach telling him he sucks. That would have set the stage to become a drug addict. That's
no,
you should have become a drug addict or a thief.
That set a pattern, though, because then I had other coaches along the way that also told me I was shitty or whatever, and I got really confrontational
about
it.
Just get immune to it, right?
Well, no, but it actually fueled me because I was able to take that negativity and be like, I'm going to prove them wrong. You know what I mean?
So I imagine I want to get back to these cars to the ball field. You're in the Carrera GT. You psych yourself up. You get to the game. You lose. Do you drive the Carrera GT home?
Or a Corolla.
Well, no, but that was the thing. I did have, so when I, my rookie year.
Did you have losing cars in the lot?
What I like to call is I had blue collar cars. You know, so I had an F-250 diesel that was like my tow vehicle to take my track cars around and stuff.
Okay.
It was like a 03 with 100,000 miles.
So that would be waiting in the lot for you if you lost?
No, sometimes. I mean, I had you know, you always have to have two cars. So if I felt like I didn't deserve to
Why
drive.
Why do you always have to have two cars? What do you mean? In the ballpark? I'm talking about games.
In life. I'm saying in life.
I'm talking about baseball. I'm talking about the psychology of going to the stadium and what you need to pitch a game.
If I pitched poorly, I would go work out after the game and punish myself.
Okay.
I would go run on the treadmill until I felt like I was going to puke, or I'd lift weights and just
right.
be like, "You stupid piece of shit."
And then you would get in the P1 and drive it home or the Carrera GT.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't happen as much when I got to the P1 level because at that point I was already pretty, you know, my routine was pretty good.
And how do the fans love these displays of supercars? They do.
Hell yeah, because I would actually stop and sign autographs.
Unlike
most guys that blow out of there. Although I did have a situation in my black and Ascot CGT. A guy dropped a blue paint pen on the car.
Oh, jeez.
The outside of the car was wrapped, but it like a little splatter hit the inside of the Ascot and a little bit on my steering wheel. And I just said, "Step away from the vehicle, sir." He's like, "I'm sorry." Because he was trying to do this thing where like he fist bumped me with the pen. And I was like, "Don't fist bump me with the pen. Like, put the cap on the pen and walk away." You know?
Yeah.
I hate so to this day. If someone sees a paint pen, I get like that nails on the chalkboard thing because I remember like,
that's awful.
I ended up cleaning it up with some soda water.
How do you control, or you did pretty well with controlling the crazy baseball custom car guy, right? I'm sure there were guys on the team and guys in the major leagues who were really screwing up cars.
There was
with
some
bad
flagrant,
ideas.
Flagrant right. poor taste. It was amazing. I had a teammate.
Who's the worst?
Alfonso Soriano.
What did
Hi,
he
Alfonso.
Do? Hi, Alfonso.
Alfonso Soriano was paid very well.
Soriano Customs.
Is he a friend of yours?
No, but he's a teammate. Okay. So he was.
But he loves the car, I'm sure. But let's hear about his bad taste.
He was like a caricature of a. He was a movie character playing a real person. You know, like he had at one point. I don't want to get too into his personal life, but he used to carry around a bag that had party devices in it. And one of those party devices was a stack of at least $10,000 cash.
Right.
So to
and what do you mean party devices? What does that mean?
Like he'd have a boombox and maybe some other party favors.
A party kit.
A party kit, yes, exactly. But the party kit would sometimes be for like illicit purposes.
I
and
see.
So,
right. Kind of like Matt Lauer's closet, right?
Yes, exactly. So he didn't have the locking button on his locker, but he would keep things in his locker because we at Texas we had a huge, I would say like a 3 foot wide locker, and then we'd have a drawer that was fairly right. deep on, you know, like 3 feet deep and, mm-hmm. and 3 feet wide. So he would slide that out, and he's like, "Hey, if you need any luck, just rub this thing," you know. And he kept a lucky. Female anatomical simulator in his
well what is now what about the cars what did he do with his
he
cars?
Had an H2 Hummer
right
with TVs that were actually pointed outwards, so when he'd be driving on the freeway playing the Yin Yang Twins video, you could see it because he had
from your car
and he had instead of the grill, it was his signature in solid metal.
Oh, that's awesome.
And this is, I love this guy.
Yeah.
It was all white.
He should customize cars. That sounds great
and
so far.
He had, you know how the Hummers had like little bits of like black plastic all over?
Right.
Well, all that was chrome. The wheels, it was like 24-inch wheels. And it instead of the big, like, it's almost like, you know, in the ZR1 when they came out with it, they had like the cutout on the hood.
Right.
Well, he had something like that, but it was a home plate in chrome. and then it was like a photorealistic drawing of him, like with his home run swing like that. You know what I mean? And then
that's
his
awesome.
Signature underneath, and it wow. just said 12. So his number is 12, so it's 12 everywhere.
Did he give the cars away when he was done? Because no one's buying that.
No, I think one of his wives drove that.
That's like
a
the Michael
dollar
Jordan
car
house.
Worth $5.
Well, whenever you plaster your name all over a car, it's hard to sell that thing, right?
No, I mean, no one's really that big of a fan, and if they are, they probably don't have the money to buy it. They
well,
probably
the,
like one of them.
Yeah, the fans
skin,
don't
you know?
Have the money to buy that, and even if you do, don't you want your own car?
Well,
there was a remember the did I ever tell you about the Jerry Seinfeld edition Mercedes that
oh, wow.
I
oh,
that
God.
Jerry had? He had a custom Mercedes made. By the factory, and
it only played one song.
Boop, boom, boom, no, you. Yeah, that's right. That, they should have done that. That would have been better than what they made. It was an E55 that was jacked up and faster. And when you opened the door, it said Seinfeld edition on the door,
horrible.
And purple light. It was interesting. This is back.
Like, Michael Richards calls you immediately. Yeah. He's like.
No, it was, you know, it was that car. I was single at the time, so, you know, Jerry was like, I'm going to get rid of this car. I'm like, oh, please, just mail it right to me. I want this. This is perfect. Cause
yeah,
I
but
bought
an
my E55
is a cool car.
It was, and it,
it was
this,
funny for you to be driving.
This wasn't an E55. This was a jacked up E55 custom with more horsepower.
Okay.
They really tricked the thing out, chassis, the whole deal. What I didn't know is they snuck it into the country through DOT. Somehow, it was not registerable. But I said, send it out. Let me drive it. And I remember opening the door, and it said Seinfeld edition. And I went, all right, already this is just wrong. This feels really wrong. And he had, but I thought I was going to buy it, right? I think it was $75,000. And it had this sticker, this inspection sticker in the front, all the New York stuff that you put in the front windshield. And I had my guys remove all that stuff. And then the next day, I decided, I don't want this car.
Oh, boy.
That's right.
Oh boy.
This is the only time I can remember, and I've known Jerry since the show, since the late 90s, where he's called me screaming at me, just screaming, because that car, he had pulled a lot of strings to get that car registered, apparently. It was very difficult, and when I scraped off everything, he
cut
said,
all the strings.
I remember this is what he said. He goes, Spike, now they have to export the car and crush it. I said, what? He goes, they're going to crush the car because of you. I said, boy, I'm really sorry about that, Jerry. And they exported the car, and they crushed it.
Are you serious?
Mercedes gave them something new, but yeah, that car was done. That car was tough. So he had a right to be angry with
it's
me.
It's amazing that you guys are still friends over that. If
he should have put you in the
if
trunk
it weren't,
for the crush.
Some weren't. People would have.
Like, yeah. They immediately felt bad, and they gave him a new car. So he money-wise, he was fine. He made a little money on the deal.
Money-wise,
but
he's okay.
How funny is it that a car is shipped to Mexico? Crushed, and we would riff about why you couldn't crush it here. Why do you have to ship it to Mexico and crush? It just became this funny little footnote to this crazy world of cars we're doing. All right, we got to take a break, guys. When we come back, I promise we're going to talk McLaren. We're here in McLaren by O'Gara, their big open house here in Beverly Hills, and we're going to get into that new 2019 McLaren Center. We'll be right back. Let's talk about AMSOIL. You know why I like AMSOIL? Because they're a bunch of car people. They're gearheads, they're into all kinds of power sports, and basically they get it. Recently, AMSOIL created a guide to increasing horsepower in your vehicle. It has insider tips from some of the best in the business on coaxing more power out of your engine. Who doesn't want more power out of their engine? You can get your copy free at AMSOIL.com/spike. While there, find more about AMSOIL synthetic motor oil too, like how AMSOIL Signature Series synthetic motor oil delivers 75% more engine protection against horsepower loss and wear than required by a leading industry standard. Go to AMSOIL.com/spike to get your free insider's guide to increasing horsepower.
Podcast One remembers broadcasting legend Dick Enberg.
A hearty welcome to Steve Kerr.
What a thrill to have listened to you all these years.
He's Basketball Hall of Famer John Calipari.
You still have a great voice of all time.
Tennis Hall of Famer Billie Jean King.
I just hope everyone listening understands what an icon you are.
He's my all-American friend Bill Walton.
Dick Enberg, I love you.
Listen to his amazing stories and his final interviews on Sound of Success, the Dick Enberg Podcast. Only on Podcast One. Or the Podcast One app.
You're listening to Spike's Car Radio.
All right, welcome back to Spike's Car Radio. We're here with our guest CJ Wilson. We're here at McLaren of O'Gara. I want to have you here, of course, because you have those two McLaren dealerships. Let's talk about the 2019 McLaren Senna that was just announced over the weekend. We're recording this on Tuesday, early December, but you're probably listening to it a little later here in the holiday season. Nice Christmas gift.
Yeah,
from the folks at McLaren.
Yeah, the idea behind the car is to just have the ultimate no compromise, street legal but barely, you know, track car. So it's part of the ultimate series lineup.
Let me run through some stats on it. Twin turbo 4-liter V8 to produce a claimed peak of 789 horsepower, 590 foot-pounds of torque. Wow.
That's adequate.
Yeah. This car, now am I wrong, is the 720S their last model, is that as fast as the P1?
So the 720S, because it doesn't have the hybrid system, it actually makes almost the same amount of power as the turbo engine without the hybrid from the P1. The P1 made 737, this makes 720.
So it's a comparable car for a lot less, right?
Yeah, I mean, the
we're looking at two of them right now.
Yeah, we have the Velocity car here, which is the kind of red fade in the front.
Right. So
the
cool and what thing, is that blue behind it? Because that's killing
that's
me right
Paris
now.
Blue. It looks like, a lot like Voodoo. So what they're doing is they're naming all of their... They're doing the 60s Porsche style where all the colors are named after a location, like Irish green or Mexico blue or India red.
So Paris blue, kind of like the Ferrari French blue.
Yeah,
right?
That's very similar to Azzurro Dino, actually.
That's gorgeous.
Yeah, but so the 720 has taken a lot of the cues of that sort of melted alien spaceship kind of
from the P1
ethos.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly, from the P1.
I love these cars. You know, I hadn't driven them until Car Matchmaker, and I was so pleasantly surprised at how easy they are to drive around town.
Well,
my first drive was like driving downtown in traffic,
right.
And I was so comfortable.
Right.
And it was kind of blown away by
suspension. They use the fully hydraulic multi-link suspension, so you get cross linkage from the front right to the back left and vice versa.
So this new Senna car, it's a little polarizing. The design
is funky. It's a little funkier than I thought. I saw it a year ago, actually, in the design studio.
Is this the one we were talking about that's got the center seat?
No, that's the BP23. That's the new one that's coming out. They're only making 100 of. That's the one that's going to be like a Bugatti Chiron.
So how many of these Sennas are they going to make?
500.
500.
120 to the States. All spoken for. We, as dealers, we each turned in lists of, you know, 15 to 25 people, and we only got 4, 5, 6 cars per store.
And is this a track car? Is that what this is designed for?
Yeah. It's really going to be the ultimate rip everybody's face off on lap times. If you imagine that there was
what is the comparable Porsche that it would be up against, like a GT2 RS maybe?
Yeah, I would say the GT2 RS, but I think
you know, the thing, it's hard to compare the GT2 RS because being based off a 911, it doesn't really have the aero, you know, that,
right,
that this car
right.
does. So it's, I would say it's more like a Ford GT or, you know, something in that level. But, you know, from a price standpoint at $1 million, it's kind of on an island. There's not a lot of cars that are base price $1 million, you know. So in that regard, that's what the 918 debuted at, and that's what the P1 debuted at. So I'd say it's kind of going up against those two cars.
And in this car that's coming after, you mentioned, which one is that?
The BP23.
The BP23. I haven't seen that. Zuckerman, have
you
seen
it? No one's seen it yet.
Their nomenclature.
No, but what this is bespoke project number two with three seats.
Because it's got the center seat.
Yes, like the F1.
Like the F1, right.
And I,
that's exciting.
I finally got to drive an F1 this summer.
You did?
And it was a life-affirming experience for me.
Really?
It's as good as they say.
Good. Yeah, I've driven two now. I drove the long-tail GTR, and then which is, has a sequential shifter with like a big, you know, a big
broom
rod.
Handle. Yeah,
it's awesome. And then so that one weighed 2,200 pounds and had 710 horsepower.
Jesus.
So imagine, so for those of you that have Porsches that are listening, it's basically a Carrera GT on a super hardcore diet, but you sit in the middle. It's the similar sounds, same clutch, same shifter.
Does it handle the same?
Yeah, it handles very similar, but it weighs almost 1,000 pounds less. That's the deal.
It's so, really made for a guy like me with two boys. I get in the center. I got one boy on either side so they don't fight.
And your wife waves goodbye.
Yeah, or someone
exactly.
like someone like the rapper Pitbull who might want to put two girls
and how much is that car going to cost?
Which one?
An
the
F1?
BP23?
Yeah.
The BP23 is going to be a Bugatti level car. So in it's the two to three, something like that.
And know. If you wanted an F1 today, is it $15 million?
Between 10 for a ratty one and 25 for like one that won Le Mans or something like that.
And you got to fly the mechanics in, Zuckerman. You got
to
bring them in.
There's
put
one
them
or
up.
Two guys, but we're actually working to get certified at our store in.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, in Arizona. So because my partner on the Chicago store actually owns an F1.
Wow.
So and I have a lot of friends. I actually go on the F1 tours with my P1.
So what, you know, now that you're racing Porsche and you've got all these McLarens, what are you driving? What is your daily? What do you like? What did you drive down here?
I drove down a 2018 GTS.
That's your blue one out
my
there.
My blue
sapphire,
one out there, yeah.
Blue
so
metallic.
It's got the a couple touches to it that I like. I like blue and yellow.
Manual, you know, PDK.
Manual. It's got silver stitching, Alcantara interior. It's got the carbon fiber stuff. And then it's also got the vents painted, the slats painted in blue, and then the vents are stitched in leather.
Wow. So that's your personal car.
That's my new personal car, yeah.
Do you get to put dealer plates on it and just not pay sales tax and
well,
do that whole
no,
deal?
No, I did a dealer employee lease actually on it. So
wow.
I get the dealer employee lease is a
did
fantastic
you negotiate
program.
In a mirror with yourself?
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, this buy rate is too high. No,
let me see your license. Yeah. I'm not giving you my license. No, yeah, give me your license. I'll be right back.
Yeah.
I got to go to the bathroom and talk to that mirror for a second.
So
where did he disappear to with my license?
I actually, so I was, you know, I had my sales manager write it up and I was like, are you trying to make back end money on me right here? Are you trying to bump me on something?
That's so great.
But yeah, no, I have that. I have my R still, you know, I've got about 1,700 miles on that.
What do you think about the R market right now? Where do you think it's heading? I bumped into a guy yesterday down at Santa Monica Airport.
I bought my first sticker, so I don't care.
He proudly showed me his R, and I think he paid in the high threes. Lovely car. He wasn't driving it. And I said, you got to put a lot of miles on that because that's the only thing to do with it.
Yeah,
really,
they're
days.
Great to drive, but I mean, I think... You know,
have you driven the new GT3 Touring class?
Not yet, no. But that's the Napology car.
Right. Have you driven the new GT3? Have you driven the new GT3 with a manual transmission?
No, we haven't had one delivered yet. We're going to have one coming in that looks just like this.
I drove it, but I haven't driven the R. But I suspect what I felt in the transmission, the shifting of the gears.
Are you guys coming up to Scottsdale Car Week?
Wait, hold on.
Go ahead.
Don't try not to talk over me. What I suspect... Well, it gets tough for the listener. Don't give me those looks. I hear about it when everybody's just talking over each other. I suspect that gear shift is the same in the R. Like, describe the shifting of gears in an 911R. Because none of us... Zuckerman, you haven't even driven it.
No.
When I offered to sell half of my car to Zuckerman, but he's sort of like... We kind of danced around the fire, but never really hugged.
Because we never decided. He wanted to sell it, I think, the half to me at market price, some friend.
No, not quite.
Not quite.
Oh, no. Things are getting a little heated here, folks. I can see there's a little flushing of the face.
Well, it's the first deal, so I don't know if he's going to try to pound me on it because he's a lawyer.
How would you guys share cars when you live in Fresno and he lives here? How would that happen? How that work?
Well, last time I checked, he's got a dozen cars, so it's not like he's going to drive the car that we split daily. You know what I mean?
I know, but what are you doing? Shipping it back and forth on a truck?
You've got a guy.
We got a guy. We got a guy.
Yeah, I got a couple guys.
That is completely insane.
No, the R for me, I got mine the way I think the R should be spec'd, which is no radio, no nose lift, no BS. It's the lightest combination of that you can put together.
Right.
You know? So I got it because I want to drive it like a motorcycle when I want to get away from everybody and I don't want to listen to anybody and I don't want Justin Bieber interrupting my commute or whatever. I put that on and, you know, I turn on the car and I just listen to the engine for,
you know, have AC though.
I do have AC. Smart. Yeah. I am not a savage.
Is it as good as everybody says?
Yeah.
And is it going to be a classic?
Yes.
Is it worth jumping into one and holding on to it?
At this price, yeah, at $550 or something, no. But and just to clarify, I never did sell a car at $700. That was inflated.
What
I did sell a car at $535 plus tax.
What's the price that you could get in? Like, so high, they're in the high threes right now.
It depends on the spec because I like, you know, I've sold paint to sample cars that are worth more.
Right.
But if someone has a white on red basic with like no good options or maybe too many dumb options, then it's going to be, you know, a $365 car, something like that.
Do you see them going into the high twos?
Depreciated with mileage, you know, probably.
That would be sweet.
But if you get one, I mean, yeah, with 10,000 miles on it, why would you pay the same money as one with 100 miles on it, you know?
That, to me, is the ideal R. The R with 15,000 miles on it.
Yeah.
Something that's been driven, broken in, used.
Yeah. I did actually track mine. I took it to Willow Springs and drove it on the track.
Wow.
And it was a lot of fun. Because it is looser, it doesn't have as much grip. It's exactly like a 964 RS with twice the horsepower.
Wow,
that's the car.
A great that's an appealing statement,
right?
And I did drive the 993 RS, and I can tell you that is a distinct difference. As you said, the 964 RS is a better car. In a
you
lot
agree
ways.
With that?
100%.
Yeah, it's funny, huh?
Yeah.
You know this. Now I'm going to say this 720 is the first McLaren that I actually like and could see myself driving. And CJ and I already talked. He's got some pretty remarkable lease figures.
He does?
Yeah, he does, Spike.
Well, I let you drive the 650S, right? Remember when I had that yellow one?
You did not.
I didn't?
You did not.
No, I had a 650S press car. I've had a lot of press cars from McLaren, but I thought I let you drive one of them with your son, Dell.
No, sir.
I
drove the Lamborghini, the Huracan.
Oh, right. Right. So you've never really...
I got car sick in that thing.
You've never been in these things.
I've never been in a McLaren.
Wow.
The visibility is fantastic.
So what are you suggesting, Zuckerman, that you and I now go in on a fifth car together?
Plan Z. Plan A is your best plan. Plan B is your backup. And when you have no good reason, we call it Plan Z.
It's the impulsive,
really ill-considered acquisition
you
of
can't
a car.
Zuckerman
buy
and I,
now, figure it out later.
Yes, exactly.
We can't come into a place like this and not want to buy one. this is horrifyingly beautiful around us. We're looking at all of these different cars and all of these beautiful colors.
Do you
colors.
Think you'd feel like a dick in a 720 if you were driving down the street going to the supermarket?
It's color specific, I think, personally. I think if you get a color, if you want something more subtle, then you get like Saros, which to me, I'm going to go grab it off the wall really quick. I'm going to show it.
Here,
hold that.
Yeah.
He's going to go grab a color. I think a car as extreme as this has to be in an extreme color. Otherwise, you de-McLaren the whole thing.
Well,
you know?
I agree with you because you got to be crazy.
Our mutual friend had one in an MP4 12C. In that gray metallic, and I always thought
that was boring. It's
a cop out, right?
Right,
it's a cop out.
You know, be what you are. Be flamboyant.
Be flamboyant.
Not to put them on blast, but they don't have Saros on here, which I think is a really good color.
Well, here's the good news: it's an audio podcast. They wouldn't be able to see it.
Yeah, but to describe it though, it's really liquidy, like metallic gray that has a little bit of blue in it.
Right.
Which I like
this blue. This Paris.
Yeah,
the Paris
blue is fantastic. I think.
Happen to like the red Velocity car.
And then there's a lighter. What's the lighter blue they have? I just saw a 570 pull up in a lighter blue.
Yeah, they have. Well, that's the thing. McLaren actually has more approved paint colors than any other manufacturer. They have over 500 approved paint colors.
Wow.
And that's kind of one of the things that people know me for is my really weird purple car that was on your TV show, the rainbow car.
And you still have that car?
Yeah, of course. I've got about 10,000 miles on it.
All right, let's go to some questions. We've got a lot of them. CJ, you're very popular. Ben Roger. Again, if you want to ask questions, just look for him on Instagram. I usually ask for him and post your questions in the comment area. Even if you're just hearing this now, you have some questions, post it somewhere on my latest post and I'll try to get to him. Ben Roger asks, what watches does CJ wear?
I'm currently wearing a Graham watch. I also
a
have
what?
A Graham.
What is that, like a graham cracker?
Yeah, exactly. Spelled like graham cracker. It's an English company. It's like racing-derived stuff, so all the faces are like carbon fiber, or they've got like these stopwatch features to
it. It's a very big watch.
It looks like a hand grenade.
Yeah, that's what it does. It's got levers.
I have a wide wrist, so it doesn't. So some of the daintier watches.
So you're a fan of their watches?
I do. Yeah, I like them a lot. And I also like the IWC. I have an IWC.
Okay, there you go. He likes that.
Roger's the thesaurus.
Porsches have been his favorite at Fresno. What's your favorite dealership? Do you have a favorite dealership?
That's like asking if I have a favorite child.
He's not going to answer that.
The answer is, of course.
He's not going to answer that question. How do McLaren's Enerev, our fan Enerev Zuckerman,
yes.
We see him all the time. He wants to know, McLaren's, are they reliable and do they depreciate a lot?
Well, I think the big thing is that initially they only had 6 or 7 dealers in the country. So what McLaren did was they said, we need to sell X amount of cars. So they pounded a lot of the dealers with too many cars, and it flooded the market initially on the 12C, which those did depreciate a lot. Like, I bought mine for $280 and sold it for $165. But I drove 18,000 miles on it, and so in that sense, I feel like I got my money. I spent my money, you know? I think a lot of people that buy a car and don't drive it, it's, you know, if they're worried about that type of stuff, they shouldn't be buying cars that are $200,000 or $300,000.
McLaren buyers aren't really worried about depreciation, I would guess, right? Reliability-wise, how are these cars?
They're very reliable if you drive them. You know, I think you have to keep the battery charged. They all have lithium batteries. The reason why Porsche discontinued the lightweight lithium battery is because people weren't charging them. They were dying. And the cars have a systemic electrical system. So, like, something will go out in the radio, then something, you know, like low-voltage things.
Right.
So if you don't charge it up, then you're an idiot.
I heard that was happening with 4GTs. That they have a hard to get at little battery that goes dead after 2 days.
Wouldn't be surprised.
New 4GTs.
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean,
and that you can put them on a trickle charger or a little charger, but it's kind of a pain in the ass. You have to pull the whole front off the car to get to it.
No, but see, that's the thing. Port. Like, there's a port in the trunk of these cars.
Uh-huh.
So you just put the little.
This is McLaren's.
McLaren.
About,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So you put it in there.
Did
we have
you get
all
your 4GT yet?
Not yet. No. I'm still kind of debating on what color I'm going to do, but
right.
I have time. 2019 is going to be a really hellish year for the checkbook and a great year for the garage.
Right.
Because that's when my Senna shows up, my 4GT, and probably my GT2 RS.
This is when we become partners on the ground floor on these cars.
See, this is I'm offering
and
you IPO.
Anything
he's crafty.
On
he's
the
crafty.
Ground floor, I'm in.
Why? What can
what
we do?
What are the lease rates?
What do you see? You see an opportunity? Share it with me. I don't see it.
He's going to have too many good cars. And he's going to need some financial relief. He's going to be feeling pressure. So what he's going to do is he's going to sell us half of the 4GT or half of the Santa car at his cost, like a bro. And
I'm
then
in entertainment.
Go, yeah.
I don't make the same money as you, Zuckerman. You're thriving.
Well, not
on
with that
people
attitude.
Getting run over. Like 6 people have been run over on Wilshire here, and you're just making money sitting
don't
here.
You save the same amount of money. You save money. I don't. I'm a profligate.
All right. Let's see. What do we have here? Does he see Porsche releasing a new hypercar on the back of their LMP1 efforts to challenge the likes of the AMG Project One car?
I see a 0% likelihood of that. I think Porsche's big focus right now as they're entering is going to be Mission E, to the point that they dropped their LMP program to do Formula E. So electric is the way forward for Porsche. And I think the like Jerry said on the thing, that the GT2 RS is probably the last really big hurrah, in the sense that, hey, throw everything else out there, we're going to do 700 horsepower, no hybrid. I think everything else from now on is going to be more and more electric, which is going to, mm-hmm. because of the weight situation, they're going to have to do a full electric sports car before they do another 918.
Jerry was saying he believes it's what? Hydrogen balloon technology?
Yeah, hydrogen, nuclear, some sort of.
He's saying that's
capacitor.
The future. Future in electric.
yeah, hydrogen fuel cell technology actually does have the most potential because it's a renewable resource as opposed to the heavy metals that you need
to
generate.
Maybe these guys do know something. Well, why is there only one hydrogen station in L.A.?
Hydrogen's dangerous as all get out. Blow your head right off.
Which is why,
is it
like
any
gasoline,
more
it's very flammable.
Yes.
So if you harness that, you know, it's like you need to harness
right.
that.
You have to harness
and
it.
You can ride the lightning.
Yes. Well, look, a lithium battery isn't that safe either. Those things burn like crazy. All right, here's a funny question from Dan H. Photo. He wants to know, is it any easier to get PTS option car now that you have a dealership.
Yes, completely.
It's gonna give me PTSD this right. whole conversation.
Paint to sample. Can you do it?
Yeah.
But doesn't it take, you know, we have a friend who wants to order a Targa right now and wanted to do paint to sample.
Does he want a pastel orange one? Because I built one of those.
He might, actually. Yeah, he said he wanted an orange Targa.
We're doing deals on the podcast.
Is pastel lava? Or is
No. Pastel is like softer. It's like this orange 4.0 that I sent you the photo of that we have at the store. That's pastel orange.
He wants something that is either like signal orange or tangerine from an early 9/11. Is that what?
It's
that's
very
like?
Similar.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
You
look at that.
Car, dude.
We just sold
email
the car.
Me the information and I will loop you into Crazy Mo.
If you think we're crazy, where do you meet Mo?
Crazy Mo
is completely
I love it.
Out of his mind.
Sleeps with his eyes open.
Sleeps with his eyes open. Replaces his toilets when someone else uses them.
That's not a real thing.
That is. He rented his apartment. He got a ton of money for it. But when those people left after 6 months.
You know,
there
are people that come in and clean them.
I said Lysol is
he
full.
He said it's just as easy.
Everything. It's better than bleach.
It's just as easy to replace the toilets.
Oh, my God.
That's what he said. And we nodded like, yeah. And then we went, wait a minute. No, it's
yeah,
not.
Yeah, what?
One is just wiping it with some bleach.
Right.
If I remember correctly, TJ's P1 was featured on Car Matchmaker. First, kudos to him for actually driving it, not letting it sit in the garage. He does drive that car a lot. And then he wants to know what your opinion of this new McLaren Senna is. Can you go on the record? What do you think?
I saw the car.
The little issue I have, right? And I don't know much about the car yet. It's still rolling out. But I look across here at this P1, and I go, what a beautiful-looking machine that is.
Yeah, one of the best-looking cars ever.
And I've seen the Senna now, and it came out in two different colors. One was a little rusty-colored thing, and then there was a medium blue metallic that looked gorgeous. But the design is not as pleasing yet to my eye.
I'm looking through
He's
my phone right now.
Show the listeners a picture.
But is it?
I would
guess you're going to be able to
Instagram.
Explain it. You can. You know, folks can Google the McLaren Senna now and look at it. It looks like it's designed to go fast, but it may not be designed to look beautiful.
I think the key is...
See this back? This
it's funny. I
right
see
there.
918 in Carrera GT. In that.
Yeah, that's true.
See,
in that shot.
The mid-engine hypercar formula is like an elongated frame. You know, the issue that a lot of people have is the front overhang, which you need to get because it has a lot of active downforce generators. But the thing that I thought was a little strange, to be honest with you, I felt like the rear wing, it's literally directly above the axle for maximum downforce.
Right.
I thought it was going to be a little bit pushed off the back of the car like the P1 GTR. Which I feel like is the most beautiful solution, personally. So I think sometimes they got to the point where they said, "Hey, you know what? We could probably make more downforce if we do it this way, and then therefore make more downforce out of the front end of the car, and just lap times will fall down, and we're just going to be about that because like
so it's just going to kick
What's
ass."
What's this thing going to cost?
A mil out the door with after options is going to be the sticker price. And, you know, with only 120 in the States, they brought 144 P1s here. So, and they only made 375 worldwide. So I think there is going to be a big enough demand. I've got, you know, 20 people that want it.
Are you going to get one?
Yeah, I have one coming.
You want to share?
I might have already worked out a pre-draft deal just in case. But I'm going to get the GTR
That's
version.
That's a lot of money, Zuckerman. Yeah. You're feeling good.
No,
it's
just,
the end
I
of the
like
year.
Deals. No, I just like
Let's
making
do a
deals.
Deal.
Let's do a deal.
Let's but do a deal. Don't you know you're addicted to deals more than cars?
I thought we were going to do a deal on the GT2. That's the one I thought we were going to do a deal on.
We have a deal on the GT2.
You have a
GT2?
Yeah, silver one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, wait, were you talking about different cars here?
No.
We're talking about the GT2 RS.
Yes.
He's talking about
the 993.
Yeah.
The 993 GT2. Yes, yeah, a different car.
Oh, yeah. Okay, well,
I'm also trying to get a Valkyrie as well, but that's
What color is
What's
the,
a Valkyrie?
The Aston.
You want that?
Oh my god, yeah.
Why?
It's the best looking one out of everything.
Boy, he's really in a DuPont registry cycle. Just
he really
all
is. Soon
new
he's
going to
be getting those special dogs that play chess.
The dogs that play chess, the whole thing.
You've seen in the DuPont registry that
the wife and the centerfold is the two wives from Russia. You can get all of them to come
and
in. You get the pool, special
made,
pool table.
A couch made out
of
a 58
Chevy. If we have any listeners.
The prefab shed from England to put the cars in.
No, the best one is the portable bomb shelter. That
portable bomb shelter. Yeah, you got to get that.
That's a good one.
You got to get the disaster pod that you zip up.
And the F-16 rolling chair.
Yeah, you got to be careful on the DuPont registry cycle because that's all the new stuff. That's expensive. That gets expensive really
fast. Well,
there's
old stuff that's expensive, too. I mean, like it's not like a 73 RS is pocket change these days.
All right, before we go, CJ, for the folks out. Not everybody can be C.J. Wilson. Not everybody can be the real Zuckerman. What about the folks that just want to collect a car? They want something cool. Maybe they have $5,000 or less. What's an RX, a vintage RX-7? What are some cool kind of really cheap cars that you can drive and have a good time that you really respect their engineering that you would, let's say you just don't have a lot of money. You want something like that. You know, because you don't have that. You have an RX-7, right? I'm trying to remember all the other.
You have a '93 RX-7.
Great car.
You can get, you know, if you don't live in California, you can get a 25-year-old Skyline right-hand drive for like $20,000.
All right, that's still too much.
No. But I mean, $5,000 down. You got to work for it.
Right,
you know what I mean?
Right.
I'll do a loan.
Okay,
on that.
I'm going to tell you.
Wait, wait. You're selling that stuff?
Yeah, we'll sell it. We sell all sorts of stuff like that.
Where do we look for vintage? I've never even been on a site of yours that has vintage cars. Where do I go to do that? Because
That's more of an email me and I'll find it for you. Because I think it requires more digging. There's not as much money
so,
in it.
So a guy with all these dealerships, I'm going to send you an email and you're going to go hunting cars
for me? That's what he likes.
I do it for everybody.
That's what he likes the best.
Yeah, some guy came in and said, I really want an E36, you know, like a 96 E36 two-door. I said,
right.
What color?
Yeah, he puts aside the 15 dealerships, all that big business. I understand that, too, because I like that, too. And say,
yeah,
I want to make $2,000 getting this guy a car.
Yeah, yeah.
He gets off on that.
Yeah,
nice. I respect it. I like that.
Sometimes it's more difficult than others, you know, but if someone comes in and says, like this happens as well, someone says, I want a LaFerrari, you know, it just depends on what it is. I don't have one, but I'll go get one.
You still doing those crazy European trips where you're searching for cars and opening barns? And
yeah.
Yeah.
That's the best thing ever.
How many times a year do you do that?
I go to Europe about 5 or 6 times a year.
And what have you found that's been... What are some of your most exciting finds?
GT1.
Wow.
Where
GT1
was that? In France.
Where in France? Like in a...
It's kind of a... I don't want to talk about
in
it.
In an Alpine mountain redoubt.
No. It was actually... They had 2 or 3 of them at this location, actually. It was a...
2 or 3.
Jeez. Yeah. And how do you hear about something like that?
This is the thing when you... You have to have... a extensive background in this echelon of cars,
right.
And that's the problem. Is that that's why I have to keep playing the game on the Senna and the BP23 and the Bugattis and stuff, because that way I stay invited.
Right.
You know,
right.
If you don't drink the Kool-Aid, people don't invite you to the party anymore. So
right.
It's like if I all of a sudden sold all my air cooled cars, you know, Jerry would have nothing to do with me, or you'd have nothing to do with me. You know,
that's
I'd
not
be
true.
Dead to you. So
we're not like that
because he likes water cooled cars.
He might not
right,
be
but
invited.
I understand
to
what he's saying. He wants to stay credible with the audience. He wants
to be
part of the club.
Well, yeah,
so
you're selling this
I have
stuff.
To stay current with the hypercar guys. And then
I love that as an excuse to keep buying cars. You know,
he sees right through me.
Yeah.
What if
honey,
you showed
I
up
have to spend another $2 million?
What if you showed up to one of these private hypercar guy events and everybody had their shirt off? What would you do?
Are we at the
what
beach?
If that's what the hypercar world
are
was
we
about?
At the beach? Like,
no, you're not. You're in a study, and everybody's wearing masks.
I'd excuse myself if it was
car world. I don't think I want to be part of that world. Well, I guess if you're looking for a car under $5,000, you're screwed.
I'm talking
you today.
I would advise, Mustang.
You get yourself a Mustang.
Yeah,
no,
five.
I'd Volkswagen. Just go get a used Ducati.
Ooh, that's not a bad idea.
It is a bad idea. Terrible idea. Because
I'm putting money in his pocket right now with this suggestion. And
I understand that.
But I think that's a good suggestion. It's a pretty thrilling thing.
Most people are not capable of driving that safely. That's a dangerous. It's a valid but dangerous suggestion.
There's no such thing as a safe $5,000 car anymore either. So,
okay.
I mean, most of them are going to have no airbags and like.
But I hear what you're saying. That maybe you want to start. You know, that's when I was going off to college. I didn't have a lot of money to spend. And that's what I bought. A motorcycle. I bought a little Ninja ZX600R.
Yeah.
And I was in love.
But
it
you can
was,
get
boy, the performance was amazing.
You can get a legit 180 mile an hour motorcycle for $5,000. No problem. You know what I mean? So in terms of thrilling, that's the most thrill you can have.
I always say Volkswagens too. Look at the old Beetles. Look at the old air cooled Volkswagens. Those are inexpensive. Maybe not five or less, but they're going to give you a little bit of a 356 experience.
Five or less. That's such a
well. That's
small
why I'm asking.
Limbo
that's
under.
Why everybody's looking. Do you collect old cars anymore? Do you have any old stuff?
No, you know I the cars that I really really want are some of the 70s cars. You know, I really like the 60s and 70s Porsches and the
You're still on a 300 SL Roadster?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, but it's like I have to kind of prioritize.
There you go, Zuckerman. You could give half of that car to him for half.
You know, I love that car.
Else.
That changed my whole perception on everything because Spike's been trying to pound me on the Speedster for a while and say Speedster.
That's
and
all.
Eli is like, Eli's like, oh, it's a one car collection. It's the best car you can get or
it
whatever.
Is. But he loves to steal our lines, doesn't he?
Oh, of course, yeah.
Brat.
Like he's Zuckerman just stole mine a minute ago with the dogs playing chess. But
but for me, the 300 SL is the top. That's the top.
It's incredible. His car is incredible. Who do you own that outright? Is that your car, or do you share that with somebody?
I share
already?
That.
Oh, you do?
Well, yeah.
That's probably the most beautiful thing in any of our collections, that car. It's just absolutely stunning as it goes down the road, and it's mind-boggling.
And you drove it right, CJ. You put your foot in it, and that's where that car reacts.
Yeah, it was so smooth and so modern in terms of the throttle response. I was blown away because I'm so used to like a chuggy kind of gurgly engine.
Because,
you know?
Of course, that car was the first car with direct injection.
Off the Messerschmitt.
Off the Messerschmitt. Right, the Bosch direct injection, for first and last direct injection for 50 years.
Yeah, and it's a shame that I would say most of the people that own those probably don't drive them often, but in terms of public awareness, because I think that we need to see those cars around, because the thing that you said that I thought was really great was you said, you know, there's a sort of like movie star like grace to this car that you don't get in a lot of these other cars of that value. Once you get into that seven figure range, half those cars, like you said about the one of these or something like that, or maybe, you know, you get that sort of like Lambo driver kind of sneer from somebody. Like they see somebody in a 488 revving their engine, they're like, "Ugh, look at this guy," you know. But in a SL, you're just like, "Wow, that's good luck to that guy. He's got it all going."
Well, I can see there's going to be a deal here at some point. These two guys are going to start dealing. We're out of time, gentlemen. CJ, I want to thank you for trekking all the way down here and doing the podcast here at McLaren, the Ogara. McLaren by Ogara is what they're calling this place now. It's stunning to be around these beautiful cars. It's dangerous. It's stunning. If you're in town, come check them out. I bet you that P1 GTR stays here for at least a few months. That thing is absolutely gorgeous.
Must be big dollars. Or is that just –
That's a customer car.
It's a customer
car.
Yeah,
I know whose car that is.
CJ, where can we all catch up with you? On Instagram? You're CJ Wilson Photo, right?
Yeah.
Why are you CJ Wilson Photo?
He's like three things, right?
I know, but what's your main thing? What's the main shit if people want to get in touch with you?
McLaren Dad is the car one.
McLaren Dad. Okay. Yeah. McLaren Dad, Zuckerman, you're at The Real Zuckerman if you've been injured.
Reach out.
Do you even advertise your firm? You're just doing so well that you don't even have to advertise anymore.
I've seen the old YouTube ad.
Was there a YouTube?
Oh
ad?
Yeah, you can. I've Googled that. Johnny and I.
Explain you to other people, and
it's
say,
hard
like,
to. Yeah,
Matt Farah does a good impression of me on the smoking tire.
I didn't think it was so good. I think I'm far better doing Zuckerman than
better.
Zuckerman. And what I'm starting to hear when we're out in Malibu having our private coffee. Is people coming up and going, oh, I want to meet you, Zuckerman, because I had this idea of how you looked by your voice, and you don't look like that.
Well,
which is a radio thing.
Good or bad, we don't know.
I think that's just a radio thing. Anybody, you can never figure out what someone looks like over the radio
or
on a
podcast.
But if you
ask somebody what they think, if you ask the owner of the voice what they think they look like to people who are listening, it's a really good psychology test. Because no one's going to say to you, I think I look really handsome the way I sound on the note. I say I look like a vile old ogre.
No, you're not.
A horrible creature.
So for the cartoon version of the podcast.
Right.
You're not a professional baseball player like CJ, but you're not a vile old ogre. I think you're an affable.
Some of the comments are pretty vile, but I like that though.
I think that's who he is.
He acts like it's on purpose in a way of like some sort of. Like, this is how I am, but I think he likes to act like that to be funnier because
I think this is a little spillover from how he's talking to other lawyers on the phone and making the money. I think a little spillover into real life.
You have to project.
Fly on the wall.
You have to.
Yes. He's constantly about winning these negotiations. And then you can't, as you know, when you finish a game, you're shot out into space at 100 miles an hour. And he comes out of those negotiations of the courtroom and he's still in animal mode. And it takes him a few hours to come down. And those are the best hours.
I've always said the attributes that make me successful in the law game do not make me very comfortable as a human being.
Well, he's a killer. And if you need help with that kind of help, Zuckerman is your man. You can check out at Spike Ferriston on Instagram. That's where I am most active. And we have next week. I don't know who we have next week, but we'll have another episode of Spike's Car Radio. We'll see you then. Here's some useful car tips you might not be aware of. A coffee filter and a little bit of olive olive oil can clean your interior. Removing excess weight from your car will improve gas mileage, and you can place your key fob to your chin. That's right, the chin on your face, to increase its range. Weird, right? Well, here's another tip you also might not know about. TrueCar also helps people get used cars. That's right, TrueCar isn't just for buying new cars. With their certified dealer network and nationwide inventory of nearly 1 million used cars, you'll enjoy real pricing on actual inventory and a simpler buying experience whether you buy new or used. And with TrueCar, users can see what others paid, so they know if they're getting a good deal before buying. They're also more likely to enjoy a faster buying experience by connecting with TrueCar certified dealers. When you're ready to buy a new or used car, check out TrueCar and enjoy your more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.
Thanks for listening to Spike's Car Radio. Download new episodes every Wednesday on the Podcast One app or subscribe now at Apple Podcasts or PodcastOne.com.